Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we are back after a short hiatus. We are going to basically catch up on all the big news that we missed over the last week or so. So mainly, that means Carmelo Anthony coming back to the NBA, Ben Simmons no longer being a coward, and the Orlando Magic, how they're going to deal with the Nikola Vucevic injury. Before we get into all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Well, it's going well in terms of, you know, I'm somewhat fluid right now because I'm very, very sick. I can figure out, like, what's happening on the computer screen in front of me, but that's about it.
That's really all you need.
That's all I need for actually recording an episode. That's what I need.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I'm not very lucid whatsoever. No. And it was lucid the word I was looking for. See, there we go. I'm going to make like a ton of mistakes today because my head is not with me whatsoever. I'm going to be coughing and it's going to be horrible for me here. And it's, yeah, so look forward to that, people. At least I have my sick voice going, so you get that too. It's joy all around.
Well, we appreciate you toughing through it, and we will get to your Chicago trip a little later in the episode. But first, we have
to
hit
Chicago? Oh, my God. I didn't even
Do you remember that part?
Not right now, no.
Well, first we need to get into, naturally, of course, like the second you leave for Chicago, and I went to D.C. for a wedding this weekend, so I also wasn't available to record. So, like, of course, big news broke the second that both of us left our respective homes. That big news, of course, is Carmelo Anthony finally is back in the NBA after a year-long hiatus, I guess is the word. Like, a forced hiatus, because it wasn't really by choice.
That seems right, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to call it, like, blackballing, because it's not a Colin Kaepernick situation, but, like, teams just did not want to play him. Houston, Chicago, nothing. So finally, on Thursday, I believe, Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN reported the Portland Trail Blazers were going to sign him. He made his season debut Tuesday against the New Orleans Pelicans and had a very Carmelo Anthony-esque game. Had 10 points on 4 of 14 shooting, 4 rebounds, 5 turnovers, 5 fouls, finished a team worst minus 20. Thursday, he suited up again against the Milwaukee Bucks in a surprisingly competitive game, considering the Blazers did not have Damian Lillard. Much better from Carmelo on Thursday. 18 points on 6 of 15 shooting, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, and only a minus 1 in his 29 minutes. So, Mort, I mean, we've talked about the Blazers already this year, and really, I mean, injuries just have destroyed their front court in particular. The Zach Collins shoulder injury was brutal. They were expecting a big leap out of him. Of course, Yusuf Nurkic is still out, recovering from the leg fracture he suffered late last year. They just waived Pau Gasol, who you weren't expecting much out of. He's 39 years old, but he was recovering from a foot injury, and I guess it just wasn't going as intended. So they are just really, really thin up front. It's Hassan Whiteside, who Blazers fans have already turned on. It's Scott Labissiere, and then it's 34-year-old Anthony Tolliver's corpse.
Correct.
Which is just the worst front court in the league. I haven't gone through team by team, but just off the top of my head, there's no way any team is worse than that. So
right, at its current state. I mean, because if you had like a healthy Yusuf Nurkic and Zach Collins, obviously that would change things.
Yes, yeah. And now that I think about it, maybe the Warriors are worse. Just that they're going to be at the bottom of that conversation.
The Eric Paschal stand wagon is coming for you.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Draymond is still upright, so that gives them the advantage. Either way, their front court is devastated. So to that extent, the Melo signing makes sense. But do you think he can help save this Blazers team that is now 5-11?
So that's a big ask. I think he can help them give them minutes at a position of need right now, which is really all they need. He's going to help out on the glass. He's going to give them some three-point shooting. And he is capable of scoring in the post still, and he's probably not going to be effective doing it necessarily. I mean, again, he's, what, 35? so, you know, it's – and he's not the most efficient shooter. I would kind of limit his role to being a catch-and-shoot guy and an opportunity guy. So if you run a pick-and-roll and you catch a switch on him with him having a smaller guy defending him, like, take that dude into the post and see what happens. That's fine. But in terms of, like, saving the team, no. I think that's too big of an ask of a 35-year-old who played 10 games last year.
Yeah, I'm right with you. I don't think they should go into this expecting him to be 10-time All-Star, 25-point-per-game scorer Melo. Like, you,
right.
You don't want that. Because, I mean, like, with all due respect to Carmelo Anthony, who was among one of the league's leading scorers for most of his career, efficiency was never his game. Mm-hmm. You know, like, early in his career, he shot 48.1, 47.6, 49.2 in his third, fourth, and fifth seasons. After that, his highest was 45.8. Like, for most of the past decade, he's been a high-volume, low-efficiency guy.
Yeah.
And you have Damian Lillard. Like, you don't want to take the ball out of Lillard's hands to feed Anthony on post-ups and isolations.
Correct.
I think you're right that as a spot-up three-point shooter, he's going to bring tremendous value. I mean, of course, it's a absurdly small sample size, but he has hit 5 of his first 8 threes with the Blazers, which is a good sign. And his shot profile, even over the past couple years, like Houston, again, small sample size, it was only 10 games, but even in OKC the year before that, he had started transitioning more into a catch-and-shoot role. Like, I think around a third of his three-point attempts were of that variety, whereas previously he was more, like, right around 20%. So he knows that that's kind of the way he needs to go. And I saw there was some interview with his trainer on SNY, and they were talking about, like, all right, well, he knows he needs to be better on defense. He knows he needs to, like, move his feet more and work more off the ball. Like, work on his off-ball movement. And he did that, and he adapted well to it. So, it wouldn't shock me if, you know, like, I know it's kind of like a meme that, like, oh, yeah, Carmelo Anthony's back. He's going to be terrible on both ends of the floor. Like, the Blazers were so desperate for help that I actually do think he's going to help them.
Yeah, but not in terms of being a savior.
Right, yeah. Like, it's hard to say how this is going to go just because we haven't seen him play with Dame yet. So, like, especially that game against the Pelicans, they were clearly running their offense through him, which is not good. You do not, that's not the way to make this thing work. But, you know, part of me wondered if it's like, all right, well, Dame's out. We're probably going to lose this game anyway. Let's just, like, get Carmelo back in the rhythm.
Yeah, I think it was because CJ was still there.
Yeah.
And you could run the offense through him, but I think this was just a situation of, you know, you are going to play a significant amount of minutes for us, so we need you to be at the best possible version of yourself that we can get, and that means getting you reps. I think you hit it right on the head there.
Yeah. And ultimately, like, they needed more offense from that position. Because, again, it was like Mario Hezonja was playing a lot of minutes at the four. And Mario Hezonja is shooting 35.4% from the field.
Man, I believed in Mario, and he's not come through for me. It's not good.
Not been good so far. Like,
I even made fun of the Magic for not picking up his fourth-year option because he started playing well for him in their last year.
Right. I know. I mean, I think there's hope for him. I just think he's very badly miscast as a four.
So you're saying he's the new Andrew Wiggins?
He's only 24. He's got one more season.
One more season. There we go. Take it as motivation, Mario.
Yeah. But that, I mean, like, Nasir Little was starting at the four for them because they realized Tolliver and Hezonja weren't going to cut it either. So there is a very low bar for Anthony to clear to be better than any other option they had, which to some extent sets him up for success.
Correct.
I saw, like, Nate Silver of 538 tweeted something, I think it was on Tuesday, and he's like, look, Anthony might not be good, but we project him as their second-best healthy front court player right now.
Oh, boy.
It's just, that's what, like, that is the state of the Blazers right now. I mean...
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. It's just, I mean, I like Melo. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of if he's the second most healthy and that thus second most productive big on any team, regardless, that's not great. Not at this point in his career. He's a bit player, and I think he could help out a lot of teams. I mean, hell, I even wrote a piece on Forbes before the season suggesting that the Bulls should sign him because, look, I mean, they don't have Otto Porter or Chandler Hutchinson in the lineup right now, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, they're forced to start Shaquille Harrison, a 6'4 point guard at the small forward position. So, like, there are teams out there that could use a three-man who can play the four, right? It's just a matter of role. It really comes, like we talked about it all comes down to role for Melo. If he's willing to accept, like, being a spot-up shooter, you mentioned the 33% of his field goals are now threes. I think he needs to bump that up to, like, 60.
Mm.
And if he can accept that, and then I'm good with him being, like, maybe the second most important big while everyone else is out. But, oh, boy, that's... The Blazers overall, this is not the type of season we thought they would have. Obviously, due to injuries. I mean, it's been frustrating to watch because, like, 5-11, and they made it so far last year, and we're just expecting better things out of them. I can't even imagine how frustrated Dame must be right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first effing season that I bought into the Blazers coming into the year. And of course, this is the season they start 5-11. I'm gonna stay slandering Portland forever so that they could just be good again.
Yeah, I would appreciate that because the league is so much funner when they're good. Dame is legitimately right now with Curry out. At least he's the best point guard in the league. Mm. And just seeing that being wasted is such a shame.
Yeah, I mean the good news for them is that they have some winnable games coming up. They're at Cleveland tomorrow, at Chicago on Monday, home against OKC Wednesday, home against Chicago Friday. So in a week's time, they could be 9-11 or 8-12, and we might not be as concerned about them as we are right now. But the fact of the matter is right now they are 14th in the West.
Yeah. No, yeah, for sure. I mean, look, when you look at that schedule, OKC is the swing game.
Yeah, for sure.
So they definitely should go 3-1. But okay, you can beat OKC.
Yeah, right. I mean, they're good, but like, it's a Melo revenge game, I guess.
Well, yeah, that. And then maybe Dame is just kind of looking at that game as, okay, that's the one where I need to show up.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he's been out for the last two games, I think, with back spasms. But hopefully it's not anything too serious. I mean... I haven't seen anything suggesting he's going to be out like 4+ weeks, like everyone else in the NBA.
You know, with our luck, as soon as we upload this podcast, Vogue will hit some kind of report.
No, he said he is hopeful to return next game at Cleveland.
So, oh, okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
He should. If nothing else, he'll be back soon-ish. So that will help a lot. But
Well, at least the two Bulls games are automatic wins at this point.
I mean, I'm excited to see how this thing plays out. Like, Carmelo gets a bad rap for good reason. I mean, he's a net minus, especially on defense. And, like, if he's going to be as inefficient as he was the last two seasons when he shot 40.4 and 40.5%, he's going to be a net minus on both ends of the court. But... Mm. I do think he probably got a little, like, scapegoated in Houston. I don't think he was the only problem there by any means. I would say your dirt cheap owner is also probably an issue.
You're suggesting that ownership is somehow detrimental to a team's success?
I would say if you refuse to pay the luxury tax under any circumstance, it's probably not a great sign.
Why would you pay the luxury tax when you have a prime James Harden on your roster? Sure.
I don't know. Yeah, you got to make it really tough on him. You don't want him to have an easy road to a championship. You got to make it as hard as possible. But yeah, I mean, like, Carmelo Anthony is one of the 450 best basketball players on the planet right now. He deserves a spot in the NBA. And, like, I am hopeful that this works out and that he can get to continue his career, because that would have been a terrible way for a guy, like, you know, playing 10 games and then getting exiled for 2 months. Like, right. He got the J.R. Smith treatment, but Carmelo Anthony is not J.R. Smith.
I just want Melo to wrap up his career in Denmark. I want all the washed-up players to just come to Denmark and just play, so we can actually have, like, NBA players here just for a year. That'd be great.
Denmark's great. You could choose far worse countries to move to.
I'm saying, like, and look, I will make you duck when you come here. I'll make you a big effing duck right there. Gravy, the works, everything. Come on. Come to Denmark for a year and play.
I don't know how he says no to that.
I know, right? By the way, just a quick insert on that. When you were here, you were like, wait, we can't buy ducks in, like, the grocery stores, like frozen ducks.
Yeah.
Brian, in Chicago, I didn't find a grocery store that didn't sell that.
You could buy full ducks, but yeah. It's hard to find duck breast, I find.
Oh, okay, that was it. All right, because I found fully frozen ducks everywhere. Yeah. I was like, Brian, did you lie to me, you bastard?
No. You can get full ducks pretty easily, but duck breast is pretty hit or miss, at least around Nashville, but maybe that's because no one here has culture.
You said that, I didn't.
I live here, I'm allowed to say it.
Yeah, yep. And you're not going to live there a lot anymore.
For much longer, yes. Yeah. Yes. All right, boy. Let's get into the other biggest news, not only of the week, but of the season, of the past 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, NBA history.
Tremendous. Yep.
Ben Simmons, in a regular season game, has hit a three-pointer.
He has.
There have been plenty of jokes made. Because he hit the one in the preseason against the Chinese team. And then, so naturally, a bunch of people, when he hit the one against the Knicks on Wednesday, tweeted he hit an NBA three-pointer against a real NBA team. And a lot of people were like, did he though? Which is a fair point. It is a fair rebuttal. So I'm still waiting for his first actual three against a real NBA team. But the New York Knicks do belong in the NBA. Or belong to the NBA, I guess.
Yeah, that's a better phrase. Yep.
Yeah, belong in is probably a little rough. But yeah, 4 minutes into the game against the Knicks, he spots up in the corner, like intentionally is just sitting in the corner, not parked in the dunker spot, not in the no man's land where he's just clogging up space. He's just literally chilling. Furkan Korkmaz swings him a pass. He pulls up, just calmly drills it, and then just runs back down the floor, like, nonchalantly, like nothing happened, as all of his teammates are, like, dancing around him. Like, the Philly announcer, Mark Zuboff, I mean, it was as exuberant as when the Eagles won the Super Bowl.
That's so great, man. Yeah. I mean, look, so he's now shooting 5.6% from downtown, which is better than 0%.
He's 100% from three this year.
Yeah, but I was thinking, from a career perspective, career. That one make increased it from 0 to 5.6.
Yeah.
There we go, man. There we go. It's on its way. Inching up towards the 10% accuracy rate.
Yeah, so it was his first, he went 0 of 17 his first 2 years. Most of those were not even real attempts. They were like end of quarter heaves or something like that. You know, just lobbing the ball 50 feet away from the basket.
I actually have that number right here.
Oh, okay.
8 of the 11 threes that he took his rookie season were heaves.
Heaves, yeah, there you
Surprisingly, last year when he took 6, none of them were.
Oh, okay. That seems... Yeah, I see it on Basketball Reference too. But, it's beyond half court is how they label it. I'm sure if I looked up Cleaning the Glass, they have it somewhere. Regardless, like, Brett Brown after the game even said, like, really, this was the first, like, deliberate one he attempted in a long time. So, right. I mean, now more, like, moving forward, the question for the Sixers is their offense has just looked gross for most of this year. They just do not have any rhythm whatsoever. And, like, you know... It was so Sixers that when, you know, Ben hits the three, everyone's feeling good. They go in halftime. I think it was a 53-51 lead. They get outscored like 26-7 to open the third quarter. They're down 77-60. The Boo Birds come out, and then like Ben woke up defensively. Mike Scott and James Ennis came off the bench, had a big role. So they come back to win that game. But you know, that the beginning of that third quarter, those first 8 minutes were just like so emblematic of all of the issues that have plagued the Sixers team this year. Like they just can't create easy shot attempts, so it leads to either just dumb turnovers or, you know, someone catches the ball with 5 seconds left on the shot clock and just has to like heave something up. So first question is, if Ben Simmons starts to deliberately stand in the corner, and now that he has hit a three and that opponents know, oh, he's not just standing there as a decoy, he maybe occasionally will take that shot, do you think that's going to help the Sixers spacing?
Dude, yes. Like we've talked about, just the fact that a player is willing to take a three is automatically going to help. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, teams will back off, but look, these are NBA players. Even if they don't shoot a certain shot well, if you leave them wide effing open, mm-hmm. that's still a threat.
Yeah.
So yes, it just being able to take that shot is huge. And you know, if he knocks down a couple more, and it becomes like this thing where every night he's looking to make at least one, mm-hmm. regardless of percentage. Like let's just take percentages off to the side. Like teams are going to be like, oh, okay, he's actively seeking it out. He's right. actively trying to get one done. I need to stick to this guy. Maybe not like I would stick to Kyle Korver, but I would stick to him just a little bit more. I'm not going to leave him all the way through.
Right.
Yes, that is absolutely going to improve. Having said that, whenever I watch the Sixers, I'm going to be repeating myself here. My apologies. I've said this like 20 times, I feel like, this season, and I'm going to repeat it again. You really don't have a point of attack player, and mm-hmm. that's a problem. You don't have this. I get it. Ben is the leading ball handler. He's a great facilitator. I get all that. You don't have a traditional point of attack guy who can create himself or others jump shots.
Yep.
There isn't that guy. Like, Tobias on occasion will do it, but not in the sense that it's like a fluid movement where he can, you know, pump fake and get people up in the air and spin around. Like, you don't have Jimmy is what I'm saying.
Right. No, and that remains one of the big concerns for this team. They're trying to groom Josh Richardson into that role, but it's very much a work in progress, and he struggled in that capacity last year for the Heat.
Yeah, he's not that player. I know that they're trying to, but he's also, what, 26? 27 almost? No, okay, he actually just turned 26. I thought he was in the late stage of it. But even so, like, I don't think you're going to, at that age, make that drastic of a change in your game, right?
He has the capacity to do it, but I don't think he's best suited to do it, if that makes sense.
Right.
I wrote a thing on Forbes about, first to just celebrate Ben's made three, but then also, like, you know, a couple people, Mike O'Connor of The Athletic and Tom West of Liberty Ballers, both wrote really good articles this week about basically diagnosing what's wrong with the Sixers offense, and they hit different areas, but both landed on like more pick and rolls, please. But as you said, the Sixers don't have a traditional pick and roll player. They don't have a Trae Young or a Luka Doncic or Steph Curry or Dame Lillard to like create off the dribble. You know, if they're going in pick and rolls, if Ben's in a pick and roll, they're just going to go under the screen and sag off because he's not going to take a 3-pointer off the dribble. Or if he does, that's great. That's in the defense's favor. And he knows that as well. So that's not going to happen. So to some extent, they are limited by their personnel. I think, as you said, if Ben is like, I want this to not be a mirage. Like, he needs to prove that he is willing to actively seek that shot out and take it. Mm-hmm. Because I think opponents are still going to not really give a damn about him out there until it becomes a more regular part of his game. And even when it does, you know, we see in the playoffs, like, it's the Tony Allen treatment, where the opponents, like, deliberately left him wide open. They're like, yeah, that's fine. If you're, we don't really care. You're going to take an above-the-break three? That's fine. It's still probably going to work out in our favor in the end.
Right.
So it wouldn't surprise me if Ben gets that treatment as well, even if he does start to take them more consistently. But you're right. I mean, like, just instinctively as a basketball player, especially in the regular season where you're not so drilled in on, you know, strategies for this particular team, I think you're just instinctual. It's like, oh, crap, this guy's wide open. I need to fly toward him, or I need to, like, stay within arm's reach of him so I can get a shot up or my arm up and contest if he takes a shot.
Right, right.
I think one of the big questions I have for two of them, really. One, we saw Trey Burke get some minutes with Simmons in the fourth quarter against the Knicks. And I think that is a look I'd like to see a little more often, whether it's Burke or Raul Neto. Just playing him with another point guard helps unlock him as an off-ball guy, as a cutter, as a... He and Burke combined for a crazy alley-oop early in that fourth quarter. We're like, I mean, he's 6'10". Like, he's got tremendous athleticism. He got up very high. You know, Trey Burke was 30 feet outside of the basket and just, like, flung it at the rim. And Ben caught it. It was an easy two.
Yeah.
So that is a look I'd like to see a little bit more. And, the big picture question I have right now, it's still super early, so I don't want to, like, definitively say one way or the other. But the numbers with Al Horford and Joel Embiid playing together are not good so far. And I'm wondering if they need to be staggered even more, or if the best version of this team does not have Al Horford in the starting lineup.
Oh, come on. That's rough. I mean, I think you need to trot them out together at least for... When you look at the playoffs, like, let's ignore regular season context, because playoffs is what this team is built for. I think, right, we agree on that. Okay.
Yeah.
So in the playoffs, defense is just that much more important.
Yeah.
I think they need to play together. I think they need to just accept that maybe their plus minus in the regular season is not going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
But defensively, they need to just build more chemistry. Like,
yeah,
we are, from the Sixers' perspective, 14 games into the season. That's, yep, not a lot. Those two guys need to play together. If not for offensive purposes, then defensive. So in the playoffs, those two have, you know, a well-oiled machine chemistry thing going defensively, the way they absolutely know what each job is and how, mm-hmm, to put that into effect. Offensively, I agree, it's just not great. You don't... This was my concern coming in with playing Al and Embiid together, because I know that Al fancies himself a power forward, but in today's game, like, that's not really what, right, a power forward is anymore.
Right, he's, like, better.
Yeah, exactly. I'm bringing this guy up a lot on this podcast. He doesn't even play in the league anymore, but even so, he's still what I consider today's traditional power forward. That's like an Al Harrington type. Al Harrington type, like a 6'9", slithery guy who can get into the lane, who can hit a bunch of threes, who gets to the line, who can handle the ball a little bit. I think that's the type of guy you need alongside Embiid to optimize both Embiid and, you know, that player offensively.
Right.
Defensively, however, that's, like, you can get away with it with Horford and Embiid, because they're so good, they're so smart. Like, they'll figure out a way, but you need to play them together so they can figure that out.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it comes down to Josh Richardson's not a creator. Tobias Harris is not a creator. Ben Simmons is a creator for others. And you just don't have that off the bench. You don't have a guy off the bench who can just go crazy. I mean, yo, I love freaking Korkmaz, but he's a guy who needs to be set up as well. He's not a guy who will dribble himself into jump shots.
Or if he does, that's a win for the defense.
Exactly. You brought up, like, you don't have a Dame Lillard or a Steph Curry on that. You don't need that. What you need is, I don't even know, this isn't feasible. So I'm just throwing, like, crab against the wall and just kind of spitballing here, but you need, like, a Zach LaVine type of guy,
mm-hmm,
in that sense. That would be okay. Like, yeah, he's not a world beater by any stretch, but he can create his own shot. You will have enough defense to cover for his weaknesses. And late in games, he can create plays off the dribble. He can create himself jump shots, especially right. threes. Who on this team can dribble themselves into a three-point shot? And don't say Joel Embiid. I know he can, but he shouldn't.
Right. I mean, he right now he is the most accurate three-point shooter in the starting lineup.
Correct. And he's also look. This is the problem I have with Embiid. You mentioned field goal percentage earlier in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
He's 7-1, yep. 290 or whatever, 80.
Yeah, 280, I think is
280.
Oh no, his listed weight's like 250, but he is not 250.
Oh yeah, he is not. Nope. Like his yeah. right leg is 250.
Right.
He's shooting under 46% from the field. I get mm-hmm. it. Like that's not you have to look at true shooting percentage. But you know what? His true shooting percentage is only 57 for a guy that big, that athletic, that physically dominant. Like he's under delivering on the percentages, and that's yeah. been a trend for his entire career.
Yep.
It is time to just take smarter shots.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, you mentioned before we started, or not this podcast, but before the season began, when we had our season preview, and we talked about the Sixers, you were like, well, the offense should run through Embiid because the Sixers don't have this point of attack player. You know, it's just going to be old school basketball. It's going to be like the old Shaq mentality, like throw the ball into Embiid and let him make decisions. He's a good passer. Yes, completely agree on that, but not if he's not a better shot taker and maker.
Yeah. Yeah, you his can... decision making has not been
right.
Not up to par yet.
And the thing is, you can't point to his age anymore and say, "Well, it's coming."
Right.
Like he's in his prime right now. This is the Joel Embiid that needs to be, you know, joining Luka and Kevin Durant. Wow, no, yeah, Giannis Antetokounmpo. See, I'm not lucid whatsoever. and who's the last one to? Oh, Bradley Beal. Like, he needs to be in the 30-point mark every single night.
Yeah.
I understand saving him games. I understand shaving off some of his minutes and all that.
Right,
but,
right.
Like, on his per 36, like, that needs to be well above 30.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think he's gotten a little gun-shy about just pounding the ball in because he gets... I mean, he's been officiated very tough this season,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah. I've noticed that as well.
Like, and has gotten into at least three altercations at this point. Like, he and Marcus Morris got into it the other night. It's like, you can't have a Sixers game without a brawl and a flagrant foul at this point.
Well, that's a problem, obviously. Yeah.
Right. So, I think that's part of it. Like, I don't think anyone would say this has been Joel Embiid at his best this season.
No, I don't either. But yeah. Just seeing those numbers, like it's just not good enough. And watching him play, you always, at least this season, you feel like he's leaving something on the table.
For sure. Yeah. And it's like, I don't want to say it's disappointing because he's still putting up like 23, 11, and, you know, 1.5 blocks a game.
Yeah,
30 minutes. But like for a guy who went into the season saying like, I want to be MVP, I want to be DPOY. Right. We haven't seen that version of him. You know, there was the game against Atlanta. We're like, okay, yeah, that you were that caliber of a player then. But, like, we haven't seen it nearly enough.
Correct. So. That's all I'm saying, really. That's the perfect way of describing it. Like, in terms of his own expectations, like, I think Joel is, thankfully, so extremely self-aware as well. That he mm-hmm. knows.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not worried one bit about him thinking, oh, I'm delivering. Like, Embiid is one of those guys who can look at his own numbers and look at his own impact and go, damn, I can do better. Mm-hmm. I know that he's fully aware that this needs to be stepped up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Now we just have to wait for it.
Yeah. I mean, this is all a very long-winded version of saying Ben Simmons hit a three. Hooray. My concerns about the Sixers offense remain, and I think it's just going to take a while, probably most of the season, for them to hammer them out. But that's the point of the regular season. I'm going to say that 100 times this year, but like for teams that know they're going to make the playoffs, the entire point of the regular season, sure, you want to win games and get home court advantage, of course. but you're also trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work, which players work together, which players don't work together, which sets work, which sets don't work, who's capable of running a pick and roll, who's not. So then when you get to the playoffs and you have a 7-game sample to either prove that you can have everything in your back pocket or not, like, the playoffs are all about exploiting your other team's weaknesses.
Right.
So if you haven't figured out how to compensate for that, and, like, the Sixers have some very clear offensive weaknesses that they have not figured out a counter for. How do you counter packing the paint? They still don't know. They have 68 games to figure it out.
And a trade deadline.
And the trade deadline. Although it's going to be interesting. I don't think they're going to make a big move because salary matching makes it really tough for them. And if they're going to make a move, I feel like it has to include Zaire Smith.
But. Yeah, and I think they are going to make a move, and I think Zaire Smith is absolutely on the table. And I think maybe even though this would sting the hearts of every Philly fan out there, I think Matisse Thybulle might also be in play.
Yeah, it wouldn't totally – I mean, if they're really going all in,
it
wouldn't surprise me.
Hell, even Forkan Korkmaz, because you can't even really keep him after this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah.
All right, let's go into the Orlando Magic, Mort. We got some bad news Thursday on that front.
Brian, hang on. I actually just made a mistake. Maybe this contract situation a lot better. I was just looking at Korkmaz's contract. Mm-hmm. It says 2021, not guaranteed until Friday, July 10th, 2020. Apparently, like, you can just guarantee his contract for 2021.
Really? I thought it was a 1-year deal.
It's on Basketball Reference, so it might not be. Yeah. Well, we need to look into that. I thought he was up after this year. If not, that changes the game a little bit.
Yeah, they didn't pick up his. I don't know. Was it a 2-year deal?
Yeah, I'm not. He was a first-round pick, so.
Well, but they waived, or they didn't pick up his 4th-year option, so he became a free agent.
That's where it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. That makes sense.
But I genuinely didn't know it was a 2-year deal, if it is. Wow. That would be big.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Anyway, let's hit the Orlando Magic, Mort.
Yes, let's.
I've seen conflicting reports about this, but Shams Charania of The Athletic on Twitter Thursday said Nikola Vucevic is going to miss a minimum of 4 weeks with a right ankle injury. Now, I saw someone reported Friday, I think it was on ESPN, that he's out for at least the next 7 to 10 days, and he's going to be reevaluated after that. But it seems like the fact that Shams is saying 4 weeks, I'm going to just assume he's out for the next month, at least.
Right.
That's obviously very bad for an Orlando Magic team that is currently 28th. In the league, in defensive rating, or offensive rating, I should say.
Yeah.
They are 6-8 right now, so they are tied for the 7th seed. But Vooch is their best player, or their second best player, depending on how you feel about Jonathan Isaac. So how do they overcome losing, you know, their all-star center for the next month, at least?
Well, for the next month, they will actually have, you know, a rotation that makes sense.
Let's hope.
I mean, they have so many bigs, and it just doesn't make sense. There are just not enough minutes to go around. So Isaac, Gordon, Mobamba, those guys are Alvaro Gamino. Those guys are going to get minutes now. Kent Birch. Oh, my God, the list just keeps on growing. Yeah. So many bigs. Maybe this is one of those times where you look at it and go, well, it's a huge loss, but there may be some silver linings here. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe there are a couple guys who will get minutes, who will get more acclimated to the game, get more, you know, catch a rhythm. Because look, nobody on the Magic, nobody is averaging 31 minutes a game. Everyone is under 31 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Isaac, Aaron Gordon, Mo Bamba is not even playing 15 minutes a game. Alvaro Gamino is playing like just over 21. Like, those guys should all get a serious bump up, and maybe, you know, that's going to help them moving forward. I don't think they're going to improve offensively whatsoever. I think they're going to be struggling as hell.
Yeah.
But just getting guys minutes and getting them more reps and getting them more ready and getting them more experience. At this point, if you're Orlando, that's you take it and you'll run with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so sad, but that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very tough for them to overcome because not only is Vooch out, but Aaron Gordon is out with an ankle contusion. That one doesn't sound nearly as serious, I'm assuming.
No, I thought he was coming back, like, in a couple of days.
Yeah, I would assume. They said Thursday he's been diagnosed with a bruised right ankle, and his return will depend on how he responds to treatment.
Oh, okay, so it's not even definitive. I thought he was coming back, like, next game or something. So it sounded like that his return was imminent, so I didn't even take that into consideration. If he's out as well,
yeah.
I mean, Jonathan Isaac and Mo Bamba show.
Yeah.
That should really be it. Like, then you go all in, you start Mo, and you start Isaac at the four, and you run with that.
Yeah, and I mean, like, thankfully, you know, we were questioning why the Magic had so many bigs, but now, even if you start Isaac and Bamba, you still have Aminu and Birch off the bench. Like, unlike Portland, where one injury sent their front court into a tailspin that required them to side Carmelo Anthony, the front court is the area of probably the greatest strength for the Orlando Magic. So they have the bodies to fill in. It's just, yeah, I mean, you know, Vooch is there. He's tied for their leading scorer right now with Evan Fournier. Aaron Gordon is third. If they already are struggling to score with those two guys, what's going to happen without them?
Well, maybe Gordon gets more touches. He's only averaging 11 shots a game.
Yeah.
He has not been himself this year. I think maybe. That's true. But I mean, assuming he returns, like, in a game or two.
Yeah.
This guy is so much better than what he's showcasing right now. And it's not all on him. It's Orlando. I think he's just like, stagnated, and everything's just plateauing there. But, I mean, I would like to see him, admittedly, just for selfish reasons, being the number one guy on a team for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
I would love to see what that means for him. Like, just give him the ball and get the hell out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
That could be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, boost up his value before the trade deadline.
Exactly.
Because at some point, you would think a consolidation trade is coming.
Oh, but he would make so much sense on Portland.
Right? I mean, he would be incredible. I don't know how you...
No, you
what
probably
the,
can't
what
swing
the trade
it.
Is.
I maintain that the Denver Nuggets should be the guys trading for him, but
yeah,
it's probably not going to happen. He's probably going to end up like some obscure place like Oklahoma City.
Well, I mean, Denver, you know, they're 10-3 right now. I don't think they feel any urgency to make a
big move. Don't. They probably don't. But look, they are a team who should be looking at a consolidation trade as well, because they're probably going to lose Malik Beasley in the summertime.
Right. Right, and Millsap, believe it's up after this year, and then Jeremy Grant's also a free agent, although they'll have his bird rights, I believe. So they,
yeah, no, but there are definitely some decisions to be made in Denver as well. But look, it's so funny whenever we talk about the Magic, we go straight into that conversation again.
I know, because I mean, we've seen the best version of Aaron Gordon before, and it always happens with him playing the four. And so, if he does come back. You know, hopefully he's back in the next couple games at least. Again, we don't know when definitively, but sounds like it's not as severe at least as Vucevic's injury. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's one thing I would be really intrigued to see is Gordon at the four, Isaac at the five. Let's get weird.
I'm down for that. I'm down for every type of installation there is as long as Gordon plays the four.
Yeah.
Jonathan Isaac, I agree. Like, he's 6'11", long-armed, athletic. I mean, I wouldn't have any problem playing him at center. It's fine. I mean, he can play three positions as far as I'm concerned right now. I was skeptical of him coming in. I just didn't know if he had like some sort of, I don't know. I thought he had a set position, to be honest. I thought he was a power forward, and that was more or less it. But he's moving so fluidly that he can play the three. And his shot blocking and his vertical leap and his movement just allows him to play the five as well. So I'm not worried about him whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, he has been a defensive monster this season. 2.8 blocks, 1.3 steals, and only 30.8 minutes a night.
He's a DPOY candidate. That sounds so weird, but he is.
Right. I mean, if nothing else, he should definitely be all defensive team.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I'm not saying he should be their starting center or they should play him at center 35 minutes a game because, as you said, he's versatile enough to play multiple positions. I would just like to see some time with Gordon at the four, Isaac at the five. It doesn't need to be like that's their starting lineup and that's what they're rolling with for the next month. I think, you know, I said it with the Sixers, we're going to say it with the Magic. Time to experiment. Like, you're without your best player. Let's use this time to figure out what we have in these guys because, you know, if you really are thinking of a consolidation trade at some point, all right, cool. Well, now we have a month to figure out who works best with Isaac, who works best with Bamba, who works best with Gordon. Can we find a workable rotation with these three guys where they all maximize their talents? If not, maybe one of them we need to move on from at some point.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued. I mean, I think, look, the good thing about the East is that there are six good teams and the rest are terrible. So this could hurt the Magic. This could cause them to slip in the standings, but they're not going to lose enough ground that they can't make up later.
I just think it's interesting that you're actually intrigued about a team missing a 17-12 player.
You know, because it gives other young guys opportunities and, like, Orlando probably needed to have this push at some point to say, like, okay, let's figure out what you have. Like, I love, you know, the Isaac breakout was somewhat easy to project this year, but I'm still glad it's happening. The Gordon, like, Gordon is still young. That's the one thing really working in his favor. He just turned 24 in mid-September. So I'm in no way out on Aaron Gordon. I think he's still a great player. But as you said, we are not seeing the best version of him this season. So this might be the time to be like, I was going to say one analogy. I'm not going to do that. Make or break time. Can he figure it out? Can he be maximized? Like, does he have to play the four? And is he not going to be good unless he plays the four? Like, he's split time. I mean, most of his time has been at the four this year, which is great. He has logged 30% of his minutes as small forward, according to Basketball Reference.
That's not great.
Yeah, let's see what he can do in a larger role without their best player. Like, can he seize that number one option offensive role?
What kind of three-team trade would you do if you were to ship Aaron Gordon to Chicago and Lauri Markkanen went out?
Couldn't they just take Lauri Markkanen back?
Well, they already have so many bigs.
Yeah, but, like, he's a good
and he can't play the five, and he can't play the three.
He's a good enough three-point shooter that I think he would possibly be a better complement to Isaac than Gordon would.
I agree with that in principle, but, like, there are still so many bigs.
Yeah.
So maybe Markkanen should be going a third place where they can get a legit wing.
Portland. Always Portland.
Oh, yeah, always Portland. Who do they have as a legit wing that is worth Markkanen, though, to go to Orlando? You need more sugar on top. I know Markkanen is having a bad year, but you need more sugar on top to get to, you know, to go to Orlando.
Yeah. Simon's in a pick. Simon's at Bazemore. Simon's Bazemore in a pick. They have Little as well. I mean,
Orlando would probably take that. My entire thing here is just basically Aaron Gordon to Chicago for Markkanen in some capacity.
Yeah. I mean, like, a lot of teams should be lining up for him. He's good. And he could be better in another team. I've remained skeptical of his ability to hit his ceiling in Orlando for about 4 years now. And my skepticism is not... It continues. But I hope the next month proves me wrong.
No, I agree with you. I mean, look, and defensively, we never really talk about him. And that's probably because statistically, you know, he's not a guy who picks up a lot of steals and a lot of blocks, but he is a good defender.
Yeah.
He's a guy who he's just one of those guys who does it on, you know, the on off numbers and the plus minuses. Like, he's not a guy who will give you like old timer Gerald Wallace numbers, like two steals and two blocks of games.
Right.
But much like Jonathan Isaac is going to give you.
Yeah.
But he's still very, very strong on that end, and he can handle the ball. He can rebound. He can score. It's just he needs a better setup.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Mort, since you brought up the Bulls, I know you got to see two games of theirs in person when you were in Chicago.
Correct.
Shockingly, two losses against the Kyrie Irving-less Nets, and then
Giannis. Kyrie slash Karis slash Durant-less Nets.
Is it bad when you lose against the team without their three best players?
It is, in particular when you are taking 40-plus free throws.
Yeah.
And so, I believe they were hitting almost 90% from their line, from the line as well.
Good.
That, I mean, and somehow, the Bulls in that game shot 41 free throws and made 92.7%. So they made 38 of 41 free throws. So they got to the line a ton.
Yeah.
And still, somehow, they managed to lose to the Brooklyn Nets without. Yeah, virtually anyone. I mean, it was Joe Harris and Spencer Dinwiddie, and like Dinwiddie didn't even come on until late in the game.
It was truly so impressive, bad, man. Yeah. So, I mean, did you glean anything from, you know, obviously you pretend not to be a Bulls fan, but you very clearly are. This is your first time at the United Center in a while. Did you glean anything from the experience? Like, how is Bulls Nation doing right now?
I am a reluctant observer of the Bulls, thank you very much.
You are a Stockholm Syndrome fan of the Bulls.
This I'll agree to the Stockholm Syndrome a little bit. Little bit. So here's the thing. I've been going to the United Center on and off since 2004.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there during, like, you know, Derrick Rose's rookie season and during his MVP season. I've been there during the Jamal Crawford era. I've been there, you know, after Rose. And here's the thing. The Bulls or the United Center right now, like, it's always been bad. It's always been a bad crowd. The UC is just not a place you go where you want to have an, like, engaged crowd.
Right.
Like, I've been to Madison Square Garden, ironically, to where they played the Bulls. That's a different atmosphere. Yeah. I've been in Washington to the same game with you, and look, the crowd in Washington, as you'll know as well, not
terrible. Yeah.
But, I mean, at least in terms of that, like, that's not a basketball town. Like, Washington is not that big of a basketball town.
Yeah. The crowd in Chicago.
Right. Chicago is very much like Washington in the sense that people don't give a damn anymore. Yeah. They are so apathetic to this product. I was looking around. I even wrote a Danish article on my Patreon about this. So basically, during the two games that we were there, people were either scrolling through Instagram or Tinder during the game, even in the late stages of the game.
Yeah.
And both games had, like, some – they weren't, like, blowouts, either of them. Like, they were competitive to a certain extent.
Right.
But people just didn't care. The loudest cheers – throughout the United Center on both nights were during the Dunkin' Donut races.
To be fair, those are very riveting. And cup of coffee. You got to root for cup of coffee.
We did on game two because that's what we got in our tickets. The first time around, we rooted for Biggie Bagel because
that's what we had.
Here's the thing, though. While that is very intoxicating, that should not be the biggest roar that you get of the night.
Right.
And the thing is, like, when the players are introduced, there's nothing. There's, like, small claps here and there. Like, the atmosphere is so bad. The Bulls are desperately trying to, you know, grab the attention of their fans by doing all sorts of, you know, dumb promotions on the big screen and all that. It seems like they don't understand that many people are there to actually, you know, hopefully see a better product.
Mm-hmm.
And Look, they build out this wing on United Center where they move the Jordan statue. Or I don't even think they moved it. I think they built a building around it or something. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Either way, I've never seen that before. That was my first time, and we went there twice.
Yeah.
It is nothing but nostalgia porn. There's like a 10-foot video wall showing nothing but, you know, videos from the past.
Yeah.
Like Scottie Pippen's steals numbers. And it's all about nostalgia, nostalgia, nostalgia. The Bulls have so little of an identity these days that they are forced to just revert back to the glory days, and that's what they have.
Yeah.
It is. I was so saddened to see what the Bulls have become. Mm. Like, it's, they have nothing going for themselves. Like, people just don't care. After the game, like, I was listening to a lot of people talk because we're waiting for our Uber for like 25, 30 minutes.
Sure, yeah.
And honestly, everything I heard was either apathetic to the point where, oh, well, they suck, we knew it, it's what it is. It was anger, like, oh, these damn Bulls, and I'm cleaning up the language here.
Sure.
You know, they lured me in once again, these gosh darn Bulls. But not once did I hear anyone say, well, at least it was a fun game, or, ooh, oh, at least I was entertained. Nothing about that, nothing. Yeah. My dad, who is profoundly, you know, not sports interested whatsoever. Even him, he was like very upset at one point during the game because everyone was getting up, like during, you know, not during timeouts or half times, like during the actual game, everyone was like getting up and going back and forth and buying stuff. Like nobody cared. And he was like, well, look, these tickets weren't like cheap. They were pretty expensive. Like we're sitting high up in the 300s. We paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like, and people just don't care. They just walk about. They don't watch the game. Like, there's nothing there. There's just no passion. There's no interest. And it's all on the Bulls. It's all on the Bulls. I'm just so sad that my son, who is, I couldn't save him from being a Bulls fan, unfortunately.
There's still time.
I'm trying. Like, I'm trying to pivot hard onto Luka and Giannis.
Yeah.
I'm really trying. I'm trying to play out the European angle, not working so far. Like, he's... And then he's argued because he's all in on Markkanen, and he'll point out, well, Markkanen is European too. I was like, okay, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
But I mean, he was there and he was clapping. But the primary takeaway from him during those games was, I did not get on the video screen. Like, he was standing up and he was dancing and he was showing his butt and he was doing everything,
of course,
like to get on the video screen, and nobody caught him because we're in the 300 levels. Right. And like, it wasn't about the game. Nothing was about the game. And look, again, having been to Madison Square Garden, it's about the game. Mm-hmm. The Knicks suck. They're so bad, but it's still about basketball.
Yeah.
And I can't help but wonder if the Bulls are just so deep into the showbiz aspect of it. And I'm not naive. I know that basketball is entertainment. I know that's a product that needs to be sold. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still basketball, right? It's still what draws people in. That's the sport.
In theory, yeah.
In theory, yeah. But it felt like the Bulls have just pivoted, and the actual sport of basketball is not even in the top five of their priorities anymore.
Mm.
I was disgusted. I was absolutely disgusted when I left those two games. There was no focus on it whatsoever anymore. It's an empty product. They are just selling a shell, and they're toning it out, and it's the same formula. I mean, my God, if I ever, you know, Bulls fans before have argued, you know, we should really boycott this team to show them that you want changes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're right. Like, and then they don't ever do anything about it. Look, hell, I bought, you know, tickets for two games.
Right.
Yes, that's exactly what you need to do, because right now they're getting by, you know, corporations buying tickets and not showing up. Like the Nets game, nobody showed up. Yeah. It was so empty, and for the people who were there, like, couldn't be bothered to watch the actual game. And that's not on them.
Right.
That's on the product. That's on, you know, the team for not promoting it or doing the right thing or building the right team or doing whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's it's profoundly sad to see the Bulls turn it into, I guess, the Magic or the Hornets or the Wizards, more or less.
Right.
I mean, you're playing in a top three U.S. market.
Yeah.
You have the legacy of the Bulls brand. Like, let's be clear about what the Bulls brand is. At age 11, I was in the Philippines. I was on this very, very isolated island in the Philippines. And even so, I had a Bulls cap on, and people were still, oh, Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan.
Right.
Like, this is one of the most recognizable sports brands, not basketball brands, sports brands,
yeah,
in the history of the world. And they're being run as a mom-and-pop store.
Yeah.
I am disgusted, Brian. Just absolutely disgusted.
Well, I'm going to go to Wizards Heat in a month. So I will let you know if the Wizards crowd is still as terrible as the Bulls crowd is.
I would appreciate that.
But no, I'm with you. It's been a while since I've been to a good stadium, and I'm going to try to go to Memphis at least once or twice this year before we...
I mean, you gotta.
Yeah.
John Morant, man. If I was you, I would go like 5 times a month.
Right. Well, it's a 3-hour drive. I'm not that desperate to go see
John Morant. You told me that you could drink in public there.
That is true. On Beale Street, you can, yes, you can.
So what's your excuse again?
In theory, I would have to drive home.
That's a problem. Okay,
yeah,
I'll give you that one.
Yep. Right. We'll turn it into a weekend thing. We're definitely going to go see at least one Grizzlies game this year. But, I mean, like, because I've heard the Grizzlies crowd is great.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's proof that, like, these small market teams can succeed. Like, I mean, look at OKC's crowd. OKC is a small market team and has been one of the most passionate fan bases since they've arrived, you know, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
11 years ago at this point?
Yeah, a little bit, probably a little bit more, yeah.
Yeah, so it is the product. I think you're right about that. And, like, I'm intrigued to see the Grizzlies this year in particular just because... You know, they moved on from Mike Conley, they moved on from Marc Gasol, they moved on from all of these players who their fans had a very strong emotional connection to. And it has not been easy for them to get past the grit and grind era, but then you have a Ja Morant, who is, you know, one of the most fun young players in the NBA right now. You have a Jaren Jackson Jr., who is also... like a future cornerstone if he could just stop fouling every 4 seconds, which will come in time. He's young.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what would force a change for the Bulls, but I'm with you. Like, you know, Alex and I lived in Chicago for 4 years. We lived 3 blocks from the United Center, so we'd go to a couple games every year. And the crowd was just always, like, just not into it. And it was really... weird to see. I mean, the Wizards crowd is similar, but again, it's like DC's a transplant city. No one there, they bandwagon on whichever team is successful, but no one there cares about anything but their professional football team, whose name I will not say.
Yeah.
I would have expected more from Chicago. Like, while we were there, the Blackhawks were great. You know, they were winning every Stanley Cup. So, so like, Chicago was a Blackhawks town. No one cared about the Bears, people always cared about the Cubs, but yeah, Bulls were like third-rate citizens in their own city, which I would not have expected from such an illustrious brand. So I think you're right that the apathy is real, and it's going to be interesting, especially if this season continues to go as it has, for a Bulls team that came into the year thinking playoffs, thinking we're going to take a major step forward. It's early. Right. I mean, they're 5-10, which is obviously not great, but
it's still the East.
Yeah, like they're only a game and a half out of the playoffs right now, and the 8th seed Orlando Magic just lost their starting all-star center for a month. So, like, they could squeak into the playoffs with, like, 32 wins at this point. Who knows?
Yeah, but see, this is the thing. The fan base are brighter than that.
Yeah.
They would know that it's just an illusion.
Right.
It doesn't matter. Ultimately, this boils down to the fact that everyone knows that Garpak's time has been up for years and years and years, and they're still there. Mm-hmm. I mean, and by the way, I'd be remiss here if I didn't mention the Toronto Raptors, because I brought up that I've been to Madison Square Garden. I've also been in Toronto, and that crowd in Toronto, that they were even playing, this was back in 2014, they were playing your Sixers, who had no one back then. They yeah. Like, that was just an empty roster. Right. That was like a roster player thing, like from a video game. I mean, it was, they had no one.
Yeah.
And the crowd was going wild. Like, mm-hmm. it was one of those, you know, complete gimme games. Didn't mm-hmm. matter. Like, and it was shoddily played. Like, DeMar DeRozan couldn't hit a jump shot. Like, it wasn't played all that well. It wasn't, they didn't have great execution. But mm-hmm. the fan base there, man, oh my God. Like, I remember Jonas Valanciunas hit a free throw at one point, and there wasn't anything on the line. It wasn't like, oh, if you hit this, you get a sandwich or anything.
Yeah.
He hit a free throw, and they, for some reason, the crowd just thought that was perfect. That they just went crazy. It was like, I was looking around like, it's a free throw, people. Like, what? Yeah. What's happening? Like, none of that. There's none of that.
Interesting.
In Chicago. Like, yeah. It's dead. Like, yeah. I've been in Milwaukee as well. Like, great effing crowd.
Right, right.
Yeah. Man. I don't get it. I do get it. It's because it's hopelessness.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Let's prayers up, Bulls fans. You got it. It's a long road ahead, but it'll maybe get better at some point.
I mean, look, when they move forward and they actually make changes at the top, yes.
Right.
Look, even if they made the playoffs over the next 5 years, I still think the fan base is smart enough to realize that's a mirage.
Yeah.
That's an illusion. That's not something that's going to... That it's not because of Garpax's hard work. Look, they lucked into Derrick Rose. They lucked into Jimmy Butler being, you know, and at one point an MVP caliber player drafted 30th. Like, even Garpax admitted, like, we didn't know he'd be this good. Like, nobody did. Otherwise, he wouldn't have gotten 30th. Like, so much of their accomplishments have gone through them being lucky.
Right.
Or, you know, situations that were out of their hands. Like, back in the day when the Eddie Curry trade, like they traded with Isaiah Thomas on the Knicks, who just mm-hmm. decided to give them the farm for no reason.
Yeah.
Like, it's not because of Garpax's hard work. It's in spite of that the Bulls were good for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And fans are smart enough to recognize that. So, like, they're just sitting there, emptyless, emotionless, and waiting for things to change. And the Bulls are just like, well, we're earning money, so all is good. No, you are definitely hurting your own value here.
Yeah. I'm wondering if this might be the best thing for them. Like, if struggling through this season, given the expectations, if this will finally force changes at the top, if they do end up continuing down this trajectory the whole year.
I doubt it, because they're still making money. And, right. And as I was told, so many of those, you know, tickets are being sold to corporations.
Yeah, of course.
So it's like, I think they don't care. I think as long as they make money, that's going to be it. I mean, yeah. They don't have a priority in creating a product that the city can get behind. And here's something interesting to me as well. So they did this thing during one of the games where you had to, like, just yell as loud as you can if you originated from certain places in the town.
Mm-hmm.
And the South Side was brought up, and that was by far the biggest cheer. And, like, the South Side is where you get basketball. You know what I mean? Like, that's where a lot of ballers come from.
Right.
Like, that's the hard-nosed, you know, on the street, you know, street ball, guys getting better in the park, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Why not cater to that way more? Like, Chicago is one of the biggest meccas of basketball in the States. Bigger than New York, I would argue, because you have so many great players coming from Chicago. Mm-hmm. Like, the level of quality of play in Chicago from a high school perspective is also great. Like, you get quality players from Chicago. Why not dig into that anymore? Why go out of your way to find these? Like, I had a conversation with a cab driver about this. Basically, the Bulls want these picture-perfect white collar players with emphasis on white. Hello, Doug McDermott, and who come from great programs, who have great families, who have this structure, because apparently, according to them, it's easier to root for guys who are, you know, quote unquote. I might be getting in trouble here, but I hope you know what I mean when I say who are, you know, white in that sense, who act white, who are white. I think there's a problem there. I think they're trying to create a product where the players that they bring in needs to be of a certain caliber personality-wise instead of where they look at the actual basketball games that they have. Right. Like the cab driver talking to, it's like they don't have any dogs there. And I understand that's a Jim Boylan concept as well, but they don't have any player there who just plays aggressively, who goes out of his way to say, you know what, I don't care. I don't care if I'm an asshole. I don't care. I want to win basketball games. Like Michael Jordan is arguably the biggest asshole in NBA history. He won, and he got a city behind it, and he built a multi-billion dollar brand off of it.
Jimmy Butler, perhaps?
That's the thing. When Jimmy Butler started showcasing that he had an ego, the Bulls got worried as hell and shipped his ass out.
Right. But yeah,
they are so afraid of personalities there, like outside of Joakim, because Joakim is different. Yeah. He was an unselfish ego.
Yeah.
So they put up with that easily. But again, it's like, and Derrick Rose was like the biggest treasure trove because he had the game and the humble personality from their perspective.
From Chicago.
And from Chicago. So that was like perfect from them.
Yeah.
But they're so afraid of getting guys who are just looking at the game and going, I'm going to assert my will.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care about anything else.
Yeah.
They have this formula and they want to stick to it. He has to come from a great program. He has to be able to really speak well so our white audience like him. They are just, ugh. It is very frustrating. I mean, it's, and I think all the, and this wasn't like the cab driver there. He wasn't the only one bringing that up. Like everyone was like, yeah, they keep getting those kids in. And it's like, there's a certain profile, you know. I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Do you feel better now?
I feel a lot worse, Brian.
Well, I think that's probably a good place to wrap up then, so you can save your voice. We're going to be back at least one more episode before Thanksgiving. I'm actually going to Chicago next week, so we will not have an episode from like Tuesday till Saturday, but we're going to...
Are you going to watch a game?
No, not in person, no. We're
maybe
out.
Change that, because then you can add your 2 cents to this.
No, I don't want to spend money on that terrible team.
I can't blame you.
Yeah. But in the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews, and we're now being hosted by Spreaker. So check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I can't wait to talk about Luka in a couple days because, you know, he plateaued after his rookie season, obviously.
Right. Yeah. We're going to do some early season awards favorites, so we will put Luka for Rookie of the Year.
I'm looking forward to it. All right. Have a good one.
Later, man.